Blog Talk Radio.
What it costs the county, the city, the county, and the state
To provide law enforcement interceptor, yeah, okay. And so Omar said, what did she say? It did what?
She sent out a press release that says, as we continue to celebrate Black History Month, I am forced to point out the extraordinary irony that the House Republicans are attempting to silence the voices and to criminalize the very type of nonviolent protest that African Americans used to bring about the civil rights legislation of the 1960s.
Let me just say this, Don, as a veteran, a longtime veteran and a person in their late 70s, if you will. I must indicate tonight on tonight's program, I would be going for an hour, and the phone lines will certainly be open, that I'm a little bothered by people who are enunciating situations and making prognostications who have not lived through the pain and the suffering of having no rights at all or having your rights taken away from you as it was in 1901 as an example after the Emancipation Proclamation, etc. I just want to establish that, Mr. Allen, that we as the sons and daughters of the African have lived the pain of being denied constitutional rights, access, and etc. And so when I hear people talking about what is going on, I'm reminded of the fact that I've not noticed a lot of requests for a historical familiarity with what has gone on in this country. I also ask that both my Native American brothers and my Japanese American brothers certainly join in, because now there's three groups in this country that clearly know what it is to have their rights stripped from them, to be denied their rights to have their land and etc. taken from them. And in the order that it happened, I will identify them again. Native Americans, the indigenous people of this continent, African Americans / Negroes of this continent, if you will, and Japanese Americans who were stripped of their civil rights and, in fact, in their case, put in concentration camps and et cetera. So any discussion that I think that we have on this program or any other time, we must ask the folks in question, what is their historical familiarity with what it is to be denied your rights and have your constitutional rights taken away from you? You know what I'm saying, Don? I feel very strongly about that.
I agree 100% with you, Mr. Edwards, because I'm getting pretty tired of myself of these people who, like you said already, have not lived a day in our shoes from the 1960s, at least when I was born, moving forward, and they use the civil rights movement to send out this propaganda. You know, granted, I'm not against anybody protesting, but then again, I don't see no one at the Minneapolis Foundation. I don't see anyone in front of the Minneapolis Urban League. I don't see anyone in front of the Stair Step Foundation or any of these other places or the museum folks. You know, I don't see anyone protesting this stuff when they have millions of dollars to go through. And the black agenda is just what it's always been, you know, just sitting there, stagnant, static. Nothing going on anywhere. And so, yeah, I was just pretty, you know, I was pretty set off by that. And set back, because it's like, okay, why would you use Martin Luther King and Black History Month in an effort to say something that's not true? I know that State Representative Zerwa was clear on that says, hey, we're not criminalizing anything, but, you know, to block a freeway is not only, you know, incurs costs by the State Patrol and police departments, law enforcement, but it's also a public safety issue. You know, so.
Yes, and I certainly watched with some concern last summer. I was on top of the bridge, if you will, looking down on the highway as Nkibie Leavy-Pounds and others led the demonstration. There were a lot of people that almost got ran over, brother, because there's a certain curve there as you come around coming out of Brooklyn Brooklyn Center / Brooklyn Park. And, you know, folks are traveling 65, 70, 75 miles an hour, and it's nighttime. And if it had not been for the Highway Patrol and the Minneapolis Police Department and the Sheriff's Department, there could have been some people seriously hurt and not even killed. Now, I say that to say that I'm one of the strongest advocates in the world for the right to protest and et cetera. But you know, if you're going to do that, get your history right, okay? Because in this country, my people, African-Americans, good friends of mine, such as Clyde Belcourt and the Native Americans, if you will, and Japanese-Americans, I mean, lost their lives, lost their land and property and et cetera as an outgrowth of standing up for their constitutional rights. And it needs to be said because people don't understand how dangerous it is right now with the new regulations being advanced by the Trump administration. A lot of people of color, including African Americans, need to be very careful about how they are stopped and inquiry is made of them. Because I got to tell you, Don, for a Border Patrol agent or an ICE agent to have the absolute authority to actually stand in violation of the Constitution by being judge, jury, and facilitator, I won't use the word executioner, but facilitator of your rights and to throw you in jail, if you will, is a violation, and I hope we get a couple calls on this, is a violation of one of the most important documents and one of the most important procedures and statutes in the United States of America. Is called writ of habeas corpus. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Called writ of habeas corpus. Tonight, as I've watched conversations going on since the new procedures and et cetera were announced by the Trump administration, I have not heard a single person on any of these panel shows, and I would have expected maybe some of our friends at the Minnesota legislature would have raised the question about writ of habeas corpus. Look it up. Search it, my friends.
Yeah.
All of it. Writ of habeas corpus is the foundation of constitutional protection, as is due process. But writ of habeas corpus has to do with, you know, your right to walk on the roadways and the byways and the freeways of this nation, man. Give the phone number, Don, because I don't know. I've received a couple calls earlier in the day.
Yeah,
we're saying that they have some questions about how the situation will be handled here in Minnesota dealing with both Latino Hispanics and those of the Muslim faith, particularly Somalians and et cetera. And I said, well, you know, we stand ready to have a dialogue on that. This program has never been known to shut anything off. So that phone number, Don.
Yeah, 347-426-3904. And our switchboard is lit up, Mr. Edwards. So let me go to the first of four callers.
All right,
caller 827, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Mr. M, yeah, you're live on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me, gentlemen. Yes, Mr. M. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I mean, the points that you've been raising, you know, again, you know, you're right on the money, right on the money. And so, but what has been, to put a little context, at least from my perspective, from what you've been talking about with, you know, we have the legislator that we talked about that how that ill-advised and misconstrued statements, but what we're living in is we're living in a period where unfortunately our protesters, our politicians, our news media, we're living in a time of amateur hour, okay? All of these people are total amateurs. They don't, I mean, when you go back to some of the names that you always mention, you know, Mr. Edwards, yourself, you know, we really can't leave you out, especially in the history of the Twin Cities, and being able to speak to these issues. I mean, we have to put you right up there because you're getting to be one of the only ones that are really left from that group. I'm talking about people that are still here, even like Mr. Belcourt and, you know, the Harry Davises and Mr. Glovers, the Van Whites and Mr. Probst. I mean, we had people that knew what they were talking about and what the issues were. And that's my issue, I guess, with the – you know, the young Somali lady, I mean, I think she's trying. But, I mean, if you don't have any background, if you don't have any – and to use those statements so out of context, it's almost like someone is pulling her strings and telling her what to say and what to do. And, I mean, this is my observation, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think we just don't have the leadership. To be effective,
I think you're right on the money. And on the national viewpoint, Mr. Edwards and Mr. M, I was really heartbroken for all these black leaders that, from Jesse Jackson to L. Sharpton to anybody else, that talk about Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks this, Rosa Parks that. Well, it happened to come out nationally just on Monday that the owner of Little Caesars has been was paid Rosa Parks rent for the last 11 years of her life. Okay, wasn't no black.
That's correct.
Folks,
that's correct. In Detroit,
yeah.
Let's see, in Detroit, Michigan. Go ahead. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Now we got Oprah. We got. I'm not singling her out. I'm not saying that was even her responsibility. But why is it that in our society, our people, we don't put anybody on? You know what? Business, why is a multimillionaire from Little Caesars paying Rosa Parks rent when Rosa Parks is the most, I mean, kids use that. I'm not sitting in the back of the bus because Rosa Parks been sitting back of the bus, have no context mm-hmm. for what they're saying. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's very upsetting. It's very disheartening to know that these people don't understand the history, even here locally. I mean, where are the... All the leaders must be in the shed somewhere or down at the U.S. Bank Stadium with shrimp and wine hanging out of their mouth because they're definitely not doing anything for the people here. You know, and
no,
so
let me.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Allen. Go right ahead. Go ahead. I don't want to cut you off.
I'm saying go ahead, Mr. Allen. I was done.
This is because this is Black History Month. M has kind of got something started here, and I'm appreciative of it. Let me give you an example about knowledge and a true understanding and illustration based on that understanding of history. Are the young lady just newly elected to the House, Omar, could have gone as far back as to when, if she wanted to talk about Minnesota as an example, and at least created some discomfort for her colleagues over there, a significant majority who, of course, are white. She could have gone back to the days of when Minnesota was a territory, okay, and even a little bit before, when Native Americans, if you will, had their land taken, had their rights under colored law ripped away from them, and et cetera. She could have talked in terms of, and when Mr. Allen raises the issue of Rosa Parks, see, I heard an interesting story about 8 years ago when the story started to break that the head of Little Caesars had taken it up because it was so embarrassing what was happening. And it was the outgrowth of Miss Parks being invited on the, 50th anniversary at that time or something of the civil rights movement and the refusing to get up and relinquish her seat. Here was one of the things that was very disturbing to me, gentlemen. Rosa Parks was just not some black woman that got on a bus, if you will, and decided not to give up her seat. Rosa Parks, gentlemen, was the recording secretary for the NAACP of that city. She was the recording mm-hmm. secretary. She kept the records and et cetera. Now, I thought that we had at least gained some experience when they did the Rosa Parks story a couple of years ago, and the very lovely Angela Bassett played the role. And that's when, Mr. Allen, the issue kind of came up. Well, what was happening with Rosa Parks? Had she been given over the last, and this is, let's say, years ago, had she been given a significant position in any of our civil rights organizations? Was she a regional director, et cetera? Particularly after her husband died many years before, she suffered through some very tough times. And, in fact, it was primarily Negro women clubs, if you will, gentlemen, who would invite her to their city and make sure she received an honorarium and et cetera because it was so embarrassing. Now, there was a great debate about a decade ago about the appointment of Rosa Parks to a position with one of our two civil rights organizations, NAACP, Urban League, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in fact, at one point, they thought that she was going to be selected to be the administrative secretary for the NAACP of Detroit. Never happened. And so Mr. Allen has really opened up, along with you, him, a very serious question about how we treat those who are the heroes of our movement. And I just have to say that tonight on the last days of quote-unquote Black history. But, M, you're absolutely on point, sir, and we kind of cut you off and continue on.
Well, no, but, at, you know, just to, you know, tack on to that point a little bit, at that time, you know, saying that Ms. Parks was an officer of her regional NAACP, you have to realize in that context, I mean, the NAACP and the Urban League were powerful organizations at that time.
Yes,
sir. I mean, if you had an office or you're an officer in those organizations, I mean, that was standing, and it was certainly standing in the Black community. And it had standing in the greater community because those words, NAACP, I'm going to get the NAACP or the Urban League on you, people would stop, okay?
Yes.
People would, you know, they would hesitate and say, this is, okay, this is getting to be serious.
It did. And Mr. M and Mr. Edwards, here in the Twin Cities, I remember in the 1960s, I was just a wee lad. But my mother and father were members of the NAACP. And I remember my dad coming back from these conferences and my mother talking about, well, they treated us like royalty from Minnesota. You know, that they raised the most, Minnesota raised the most money. They had, matter of fact, my mom says, well, we didn't even have to pay for the hotel room because we were from Minnesota, and Minnesota has all these corporations that donate money to the NAACP, so they treated us like royalty, which is totally different from the NAACP of today. You know, I get the email from Cornell Brooks.
Absolutely.
I get the email from Cornell Brooks, and it's hilarious. Hey, M, hold on, Mr. Edwards, hold on. We got a couple calls I've been holding for like 10 minutes. Let's
sure.
get to them
right,
and find out what they're talking about.
Let's wait. We can go with as many as we can. Mr. Allen, you're at the control board. Go ahead.
Yeah, caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Miss Marie, it looks like.
Okay, hey, that's me calling in.
What's happening?
Well, I'm so glad you guys took my call because, this is Black History Month, and in the spirit of Black History Month, you guys are talking about a lot of things, but you're missing out on some important parts of our history. And one thing I wanted to say, and speaking on the Sister Umar, is that we all did meet at the Capitol, and there was some testimony. She did ask the author of this bill from Elk River some questions about his experience with police officers. I think that when we look at the revolution of the 60s, from our knowledge and from our studying and from the Nat Turner movement, there took bloodshed for us to get to where we are today. So I just want to say that I don't want to elaborate too much, but it did take bloodshed. And I want to tap on Martin Luther King and the NAACP, and I want to say to Don, the Minneapolis NAACP did send me to Cincinnati for the annual NAACP event. So they paid for my expenses, so they are still doing that. But one thing I wanted to recommend to our listeners is the movie, I don't know if I can say the N-word, but it's N-word with Guns. And that history talks about our movement and some of our protests. And I have a question to you guys because you represent a different generation than I do. I represent Generation X, not the millennials. But my question is, what does a protest look like from the slavery days versus the 60s versus today? I mean, what does a protest? Because running away for freedom is a protest. Speaking out for your taxes and being hung, you're protesting against something, and you're being hung or murdered for standing up for your rights. So I wanted to kind of like talk on that history and say that. And I want to say that the bus boycott, when we had the opposition against Martin Luther King, had a lot to do with that bus boycott because we had some of our Negroes saying them Negroes are stupid for not going to work when we got to eat, you know. So how are they going to protest and not take the bus to work to go and work, you know, be nurses and feed the mass of kids and all that when we got to eat? So when it's time to protest,
well,
there's always going to be
some kind
of opposition.
Ms. Dean, you're missing a major point here. You're missing a huge blind spot in your argument. First of all, people today are out there in the street protesting, okay? They're bringing up Huey Newton, the Black Panthers, and all this other shit by any means necessary. The people that led those marches in the 60s, especially the 60s. I can talk about that safely. Mr. Edwards can go back many years more. But I'm going to talk about the 60s from what I understand. The people that led those marches and those protests were all educated. Huey Newton just wasn't a member of the Black Panthers. He was Dr. Huey Newton, PhD, 1990. Okay? That's
well,
what he got.
Oh, that is,
but
that,
he was
that
already,
is not
he was already,
that. You can't,
already,
you can't prove
he, wait, wait,
that.
Let me finish. Let me finish. All these,
okay.
What do you mean you can't prove that?
But you say that they all, well, let me say this. You said that they all were educated.
Martin Luther King, Malcolm X.
Wait, let me say this. Okay. Well, listen, but every time when we celebrate our history, we're only always talking about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. So that is our elders' failure for not educating us on who all of our historians who have brought us this far are. We only know Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
I don't celebrate Black History Month because I've been Black since
1961. I'm just saying as far as you know, the village. You know, our elders are supposed to be. They are blessed with wisdom. They're supposed to teach us our history. Where are we going to get this knowledge from? Our schools.
Well, we know that.
Okay.
Let's do this because you asked the question of three African American men who.
Wait.
Two
no,
of
before you
same,
answer that, can I just
me,
wait? Wait. Let me say one
me,
thing.
Two of us are of the same generation. Mr. Allen is a decade or so behind it. I'd like for M to respond to that question that you put to us. If you would, M, go ahead.
I would love to. You know, ma'am, you've made just an excellent point. You know, I mean, the youth, see, if we don't know, see, there's an organization right now called Minnesota's Black Community Project. And this organization had a program this past Saturday at the Hennepin County Library where we honored the history of doctors in Minnesota. And we went back to the 1800s. We started with the Dr. Brown family, Dr. Robert Brown, Dr. W.D. and W.D. Jr. I had the honor of honoring Dr. Thomas Johnson, who was a personal friend of mine. I went to school with all the kids and knew him very well. We also highlighted Dr. Cassius Ellis, and we had the Crutchfield family, all three of the doctors there, to talk about these things, to talk about the things they went through, to talk about how our city was. And you're absolutely right. We, as the older generation, if we don't continue to promote our community and our history, it'll fade away. And that's really what it's doing right now. It's fading away. And so we have to continue to grasp onto that and bring in young people that have interest and that really want to continue that continuum. And I just think some of the, you know, having personally retired from the child protection area after 25 years here in Hennepin County, where as a supervisor, I saw so many misguided, uneducated, struggling families that, you know, having a greater concept of the greater good of the community couldn't supersede their need to put food on their table every day and avoid these drugs and avoid these criminal activities and avoid this housing crisis. I mean, people couldn't get a room, not a one-room bedroom, but an efficiency, $850, $900. I mean, so the whole structure of what we're doing without the education, without us pulling together, and these organizations, and I'm going to include the churches, who are a big part of the social fabric of all of our communities across the United States, along with the NAACP, along with the Urban League, and along with ourselves, who had our own social groups, our own educational, our own social service help for our own people. And, you know, I agree with you definitely that we as, adults have a responsibility to continue to contribute back to our community.
Can I say one more thing, please? And
okay,
this one thing that I want to say.
We got more calls.
Okay. This thing that I want to say is about our civil rights movement. We have a lot of our ancestors who have sacrificed their lives for us to come to that point. And now we are seeing other groups come in, use the civil rights movement for their own agenda. And we as a people need to be aware of that. We need to hold them accountable. And if they don't stand with us, beside us, we need to hold them accountable and tell them to stop using our sacrifices and our struggles for their advance. And that's what I want
to say.
Right.
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Ms. Dean. Mm-hmm. Okay, take care. Let me just say this, gentlemen, because we have calls. This statement will take about a minute. One of the things that does happen that becomes a prohibition with regards to the history, M and I are of the same generation, so he will understand specifically what I'm saying. You know, sometimes some of us have to get invited. And when you have persons other than your own community determining who will be on the program and who will speak and who is qualified to enunciate what has happened, then you probably do miss the truth of history. So I will say that. And let us get to the callers because we appreciate the callers. Go ahead, Mr.
We have two callers that have been holding for a while. Let's go to the first one here. 202, you're live on the air. The Ron and Don Show. Go ahead. Hello. Area code 202, East Coast. Go ahead. Hey, you just want to listen. Never mind. Here, let's go to this one. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
16? Yes, you're live on the air.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to ask Mr. Edwards. I noticed last week you talked a little bit about Earl Warren and a little bit, I think, about the internment of the Japanese. And so with these new with these new ICE rules, I was just wondering, I know that Minnesota has a large Somali population and a Mexican population, too. So has there been any, what has been the reaction? Has there been any reaction of these communities? Or?
Yes, there has, sir. In fact, it's interesting because I was in consultation with individuals who are extremely knowledgeable. There has been a small number of Somalians who have been deported just in the last 2 weeks. These are reliable sources. These are sources that would have seen the documentation and et cetera, if you will. We even had a near situation of one of our Somali police officers, a fully authorized and certified Somali police officer, been an officer for about 5 years, unfortunately went back to East Africa to spend a month, if you will. He has been doing this as part of his training and et cetera providing information and cultural background on Somali people. He went to Kenya. He did not go to Somalia per se. He went to Kenya, where there's unfortunately a large Somali immigrant population staying in the camps there in and around Nairobi and et cetera. I think we all remember the Westlake massacre and et cetera that happened at the Westlake Mall. Now, this Somali police officer of the Minneapolis Police Department almost did not get back into the United States. It took some significant action, political action, and et cetera. Though he has traveled quite a bit back to Africa, primarily to Kenya, if you will, his portfolio clearly indicates that he is involved in training and instruction and et cetera. What happened was he happened to be boarding a plane the same day that the initial protocol went into place. And he almost didn't get back here. Okay, now he is a police officer. He has been a police officer for 5 years. Carries the rank of sergeant, if you will. He almost did not get back into the United States. The other three Somali police officers, males, in the department have been advised not to travel outside of the United States. So to your question, sir, is that there has been deportations here of Somalians. There has also been a reverse across border. Just 3 days ago, the announcement was made by the Canadian Customs Service that 23 Mexicans had been, in fact, they almost froze to death, had been taken into custody just outside of Winnipeg. If you will, they had crossed the border. There is a border crossing station in what is called Highway 94, just north of Grand Forks into Canada. They went across, were not prepared for the elements and et cetera. The Canadian Immigration Customs Service did take them into custody. The particular city, Selkirk, that is in that area, the people there reached out to them and provided assistance. Now, these were Mexicans, if you will, going back, not even taking the chance of going 1,000 miles south and crossing the border. They decided to go, and that track is about 300 miles from Minneapolis to the Canadian border, if you will. Deportations have started here. ICE and the Customs Service has a list of individuals who are considered to be persona non grata. Earlier on this program, sir, I indicated that one of the questions that's not being asked today, should be asked by all these experts we've got on CNN and MSNBC and et cetera, is writ of habeas corpus. I think, sir, you are, we've talked before, you are a trained and very enlightened individual. You remember what writ of habeas corpus is, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. What? For our listening audience, writ of habeas corpus is what is protects you from illegal, quote-unquote, detention, and in whatever case it may take place. No one is talking about that. No one is talking about really due process. What has happened right now as we talk, we opened this program by kind of appearing to joke about it, but really we were not joking about it. Mr. Allen and myself understand the seriousness in which we talked about the Trump administration has done something very dangerous, and that is they have given absolute authority in violation of the writ of habeas corpus to federal law enforcement officers to look at you and make a determination that you have been in violation of the law or you're about to become in violation of the law. That I thought that the Thought Police was just a movie. But they have the authority to detain you and to file charges at some other point in time. And more of that is going to happen here. We do have the largest Somali population in the United States. I think the number is supposed to be about 80,000. What is being said now that over half of that population are illegal? Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Also, I just one other thing, too, is, you know, you had, like I say, last week you had mentioned the internment of the Japanese. Well, right now, I believe Trump, and his administration are talking in terms of adding like 15,000 to 18,000 more ICE agents now.
Yes,
and
sir.
The thing is, for them to get to actually detain that number of people and work their way through the system, aren't they going to eventually have to have some type of internment centers at some point?
Yes. I appreciate you asking that question, sir. Yes, let me just say this, and I know that a person like both Mr. Allen, my associate, and Mr. M, who is kind of a contributor, we have here in Minnesota a couple of facilities. One, a former private prison that didn't make money, if you will, and closed down after only about a couple years. Those facilities, as well as at least 14 other facilities throughout the United States, are being readied as quote-unquote receiving facility, if you will. And so given that and given some former, and I know that Mr. Allen will have appreciation, he served in the United States military. Mr. M and I are extremely knowledgeable about that. There are a number of what were formerly closed military reservations, as they call them, that are being prepared to receive. And I think there's some in that part of the United States where you're calling from, sir. We've had some conversations over the last number of months.
Uh-huh.
You have some facilities there in Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas, that could be ready within a matter of weeks to receive these individuals, particularly those that will be detained under the new provisions that were announced late yesterday by the Trump administration. Any specific questions? Because we like to be examined on this program on any statements that we make, because we're not going to put out any fake news.
No, that's all. Actually, I'm going to have to go, but I thank you very much. I appreciate the answers, that, and I'm glad, actually, that you're taking calls again. So,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Gentlemen, I thought that was an interesting call by that caller, that he – no one has asked that question, gentlemen. No one has asked the question, where will all these people be detained, because many of them will require some processing, if you will, M, you understand what I'm saying, as it pertains to the constitutional right and the right of the government to intern them. And so you have to have some place that you can hold them. And we actually have a number of facilities ready to go here in the United States, and nobody wants to talk about it.
So the issue, you know, it seems as though, I mean, if you're not a citizen at this point, or if you have some other type of limited citizenship or some other type of, you know, temporary citizenship.
Green card, something like that, yes. Mm-hmm.
You're fair game. You're fair game.
Yes, you are fair game right now based on the color of your skin. Let me just say this. And Mr. Allen and I, in our production meeting prior to going on the air tonight, I reminded him of, in the state of Minnesota's example, and there are two primary states, New York and Minnesota, as quiet as it's kept, because of the ability to come in through the Duluth port, if you will, up in on Lake Superior. No one talks about all of these Eastern Europeans, Romanians, Bulgarians, Hungarians, Czechoslovakians, Poles, and et cetera, who come into the United States illegal. Mr. Allen, when's the last time you heard somebody talking about a Russian being deported?
Another, and you know, I got a whole grip of people from Bosnia that I ran into lately, and they ducking and ducking and dodging. Okay, but you don't hear anything about that. Nothing.
And keep this in mind. In the case of Bosnia, which was a country basically evenly divided between Christians and Muslims, I bet you those Bosnian individuals are Bosnian Muslims.
Yes,
you hear no conversation, gentlemen, about Eastern Europeans who have come into this country illegally, and anything about them being deported, being stopped by ICE and et cetera. You hear nothing on that. You hear nothing at all.
No conversation. They would have the same type of, I mean, limited duration type of approval to be in the country, but yet and still they don't seem to be under the same scrutiny. Is that?
You are absolutely correct. The documents, it's the reason that the Trump administration tested the constitutionality of what they were doing. And you and I have just hit on a very interesting point, if you will, is because there's a different standard for those who come from Eastern European countries, and I repeat those countries again, and they do not have to stand the same examination. In fact, I think that we're all close to computers. Probably need to call up information from the Naturalization Service and see how many people from Eastern Europe. I'm not talking about from China, you know what I mean, the little yellow man and folks like that. And him and I, Mr. Allen, go back to the days when black Haitians, I'm talking about Haitians of dark complexion and non-straight hair, if they weren't drowned in the Caribbean, as soon as they hit American soil, they were taken to the federal penitentiary at Atlanta. And for anybody that wants to doubt it, get on your computer and take a look at the riots at the federal penitentiary in Atlanta, Georgia, about 20-some years ago. You can think back, Mr. M. and Mr. Allen, you will probably remember that. In fact, those were black Haitians and Cubans, if you will, black now. I'm not talking about the fair skin, good straight hair, and all of that stuff. A different standard. You've been on an hell of a point, Mr. M. A different standard.
Well, you know what? You know, for some reason, I don't know why or how this is being perpetrated. I mean, you know, and I hate to get to be conspiratorial because then I'm getting into the Don Allen territory. But it's really like, you know, you watch the television, you read the news, and it's like people see the same reality, but they interpret it differently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we look at the news, we get the paper.
Mr. M, on the serious one, let me say this. The last caller that we had from outside the state, it was interesting their reflection about asking us about what we said on last week's program about the internment of Nishi Americans, Japanese Americans.
Yeah.
Do you know that there was absolutely no due process when the Army showed up, and I think it was no accident that the Trump administration let it be leaked that they are prepared to use the National Guard as a part of the roundup, okay? Because what we don't talk about anymore, gentlemen, is that the minimal number of those to be rounded up and deported is about 9 million. About 9 million. Now, when the Japanese were being rounded up, particularly all through February and early March of 1942, they were only allowed to take what they could put in a little cardboard briefcase, traveling case, and were carted off to camps in Arizona and Montana and Wyoming and, oops, Minnesota. You know, last week's program, gentlemen, I said that I was really disappointed. Star Tribune had written a couple articles about Japanese Americans, but they never talked about the internment camp right here in Minnesota, down by the Minnesota River, just up the river from Savage, Minnesota. We had our own internment camp of Japanese who were brought here primarily from Seattle and Tacoma and et cetera. Gentlemen, I think we've all read enough history to know that basically the Japanese were never confiscated, were never compensated, excuse me, for their properties, businesses, and et cetera, that were taken from them.
Well, Mr. Edwards,
and I think we're facing again. I'm sorry. Go right ahead, sir. Go ahead.
No, you're talking about, you know, the compensation for these different things, for these different, let me log in here, these different, because I want to look at something and tell you this. These different groups of people. You remember, if you recall, like the Mexican-American War from 1846 to 1848, you know, the United States promised the Mexican people who lived up California, what is currently California, Wyoming, all that area, Texas, and Utah, all that.
You're talking about the Gadsden Purchase as well as that purchase, which was go ahead. Nobody talks about that anymore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they told the Mexican people, says, hey, if you have ranches and farms here, you can stay here, you can practice whatever religion, but we're going to take this property and we're going to give you guys $14 million. This is 1848. James Polk was the president. Okay? to this day, the U.S. never gave the Mexican people a penny. So I guess my question, you know, being a journalist and stepping back and looking at this whole picture, even what Trump is doing, is like, how can people from Mexico be illegal or undocumented aliens? The deal was
that is a heck of a question. That is a heck of a question, Mr. Allen, which has been argued quietly in a number of legal classrooms in the last number of months. That is a heck of a point when you talk in terms of what happened and what did not happen in those treaties. But then the Native Americans had taught us well that by and large to these Europeans, treaties don't mean much. You know, they're not even worth the paper they're written on, if you understand what I mean.
Well,
I think that's a legal point, and the phone lines are still open. I'd like to hear from someone who would like to defend the issue of that Mexicans are illegal aliens in light of the different arrangements, treaties, and purchases of land taken from the nation, the new nation at that time of Mexico, under color of law. Nobody talks about that.
Well, I would just like to add, you know, I mean, the native people really were very descriptive in their language as they, you know, discussed a lot of the, you know, many atrocities that were perpetrated toward them, you know, and taking of their land, ruining their culture, or at least trying to. But they did say that the Europeans spoke with forked tongue. And I think that was a very apropos description of a lot of those transactions.
I think you're absolutely correct. We have just, Mr. Allen, I see a couple minutes left. Have you been able, I see you're working on your computer, have you been able to take from the immigration naturalization webpage the number of individuals who are in the United States from Eastern Europe on green cards and other kinds of special visas, and how many are here illegally? In fact, we have a
I'm looking right now.
For its size, gentlemen, we have a rather large illegal Eastern European nation, our groups here in the state of Minnesota, primarily from Russia. Primarily from Russia. Yeah. And many of them come in through the port of Duluth. Nobody talks about that. Let me say this, too, because it's what the airways is all about. I found it fascinating earlier today, gentlemen, to look at a report on the television stations here in the Twin Cities about one of the white fraternities on the campus of the University of Minnesota that is now.
Bring that up. I'm glad you did.
Yes. I said, well, that 2015 happened long before the 10 black football players, for five who were exonerated. So why does not the president, because the university is taking the position, and then I would like to hear from you, Em, the president of the university, his office is taking the position that, well, it's a matter of with the national organization, and whatever action they take, the university will just stand by it, and if they strip them of their charter and et cetera, that would be okay. And I said, well, no, because at the time that these individuals were involved in their misconduct, they were registered as students at the University of Minnesota. And give me an understanding on why we did not treat, quote unquote, this white fraternity the same way we did those 10 black football players.
Well, it's the same kind of a thing. It's a bait and switch type of a thing which they hide behind these different rules and esoteric regulations that, you know, the general public doesn't know about. I mean, they, I'm going to get Alan. But anyway, the fraternity, you know, this happened in 2015. And so what they do is they hide behind, well, then it's not our authority. We have to defer to this authority. And then with the kids, okay, well, then they go to the law, and then the county attorney says, well, we're not going to prosecute. But then they fall back on this other fallback that they have, this internal process that they can use. So in other words, they usually have two or three alternative processes that they can fall back on, and they're very good at the bait and switch, at pointing at the other person. Well, we can't do this until they do, and they can't do it until. And so this is really what happened. I mean, they were able to hide that and suppress it until they felt that it was a safe type of a time for them to bring it out. I mean, and that's just my opinion. People say I'm a conspiracy theorist. That's fine. But, I mean, that's what I think happened.
I do, too. Mr. Allen, do you have any thoughts on that? I know it's a sensitive situation. Do you have any thoughts on what happened? I mean, because they kept it hid for over 2 years.
Oh, yeah. I've been following it. I did post it on my page, my social media page, because I was like, and my comment was popcorn, soda, and equity. So I'm going to sit back and watch how this one plays out. And I hope some people caught the hint.
I want to point out for our listening audience, if they tuned in late or whatever, this is a white fraternity. Their national headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yeah.
These assaults, sexual assaults, some of them fairly brutal, started in January of 2015 and continued on until the national headquarters of the fraternals organization finally came under some kind of pressure and became concerned. And I think probably we're going to find out that, that some of the victims of these sexual assaults, gentlemen, think about this, have sued. And I bet you there's currently a case in the federal courts and state courts, but primarily the federal courts here in the state of Minnesota, filing a action against the fraternal organization and its parent, quote unquote, its parent organization in Indianapolis. Now, why was this never addressed? I mean, we're being somewhat redundant, like I care, but why was this so well hidden? But Em, I think that you've given us a good analysis of why it was.
I mean, I think that they just, you know, they always have these fallback kind of things, and they can just kind of, you know, spread out the pain and spread out the, you know, the misconduct issues. But what gets me about it is it doesn't seem to be done fairly. I mean, I really think that these football players were really treated terribly unfairly by putting them on the news, by suspending them, by... you know, and who are the perpetrators of this current issue? You know, this fraternity suspensions. What happened? Who are these people? You know,
how cute this was. In talking about that, at least two, three, or four of these fraternal brothers had been dismissed, there were no pictures. I said, well, why didn't we get the same kind of photography that we got with the colored guys, the colored kids, okay? We need to know who the colored – we knew who the colored kids were. In fact, at one point, we talked about it even on this program. At one point, we were seeing their pictures on all four stations here. And at least twice to three times a day. I found it interesting. And by the way, for those that want to take a check on it, you want to probably check the 10 o'clock news – and see how the stations, and for those of you that are sitting in front of KMSP, why don't you see how many of them showed the pictures? And, in fact, they didn't even give the young men's name.
Well,
they just said,
they
were involved in sexual misconduct. In fact, they used the term sexual assault, okay? And so I'm like, wow. So why was it we didn't hear anything in 2015, 2016, et cetera? I think, you've given a good description.
Well, again, they make statements. I mean, the news media makes statements. Like, well, we don't release names until they're formally charged or until this happens or until this happens. But then they seem to rush to judgment on these football players, and we see a number of people of color, their pictures, their name, and everything is in the paper. But when
Let me say something, sir. What was so false and pretentious about what the university did, the 10 young men were never charged. And the county attorney's office was given, under political pressure, two shots at them. And so that hypothesis, that legal hypothesis, carries no water whatsoever. They were never charged. Those young African Americans were never charged. But we saw their pictures for at least 2 weeks, 3 weeks, every night. We saw their pictures. Every afternoon we saw their pictures.
But they say they can't release until they're formally charged. But again, these people were paraded, you know, these young men were paraded, and their careers, you know, put in jeopardy, and other people can be hidden, you know, and not, you know, brought out into
the
light.
That's what it is. All right, Mr. Allen, we're close to the time, and
we want to thank
our caller from outside. We want to thank Ms. Dean for calling in and raising some questions.
Yes, I'll be calling
you. One of the things she may want to do is ask who gets invited and who doesn't get invited to talk
about
it.
I just want to make one quick statement. I'm glad that you gentlemen let me in, because I thought that I would be banned from the airways from, you know, Mr. Allen, because of my critique of the crumbling foundation of the Trump administration. So I didn't know if I'd be allowed to be on. So I appreciate the opportunity, gentlemen, and hope to talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Mr.
Okay. Hey,
before you hang up,
I got one more thing here. I'd just like everybody to know, Mr. Edwards and Mr. M, that former KKK Grand Master Wizard, or whatever they call him, endorsed Keith Ellison as head of the DNC.
Well, not only that, President Donald Trump said that he would be a good leader for the DNC. Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, and I think David Duke have all endorsed the congressman from Minnesota. That's amazing to me.
With my feet in my hands.
A beautiful thing.
You know all the work I did.